Are you one of the great majority of people who has stayed up restless at night thinking, what does a marketing and communications director do in the video games industry? You're going to hear what they do, okay? You're going to hear from Insurgency Sandstorm. It's my favorite hardcore shooter. I've got like 300 hours in this game. It might be the only game in the whole world that I don't suck at. John Higgins, he's going to tell me about his job and how he got doing it. He's working out of New World Interactive's Calgary office, which is 3 hours south of me in beautiful tropical Alberta. Cue the palm trees. Please enjoy. All right, John, you have the honor, if I may be so bold, to be the closest person geographically to me, my physical position on the earth, that that we've done interview-wise here. So pat yourself on the back for that.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks for having us on. It's a pleasure to take part in this podcast, and especially with a local group and local podcast.
Right. So at NWI, you are the marketing and communications director. I guess we haven't heard from that specific position before. So what do you do, and like, how did you find that position in the first place?
So that's a very good question. Sometimes one that I find myself asking to myself is, what do I do? It's a very diverse role. And one of the things that people will kind of know, especially from the indie side of things, is as a small company, you end up wearing lots of different hats and doing lots of different roles. So in my time at the company, over the last 4 years or so, I've been in quite a few different positions, and you always kind of be very flexible to what the company needs at the time. But if I was kind of to break it down into a more basic day-to-day, what I do, I'd say most of the time it falls into kind of two categories. It's either marketing and communications or business and product side of things. In terms of marketing and communication, pretty much anything that a player, an industry partner, an investor, a prospective employee, anyone out there, anything that they hear about our company or our brand or our games kind of comes through myself and the team that I work with. That could be anything from live streams, the announcements we do on Steam, our forum posts, social media, press tours, press events, trade shows, job listings, interviews like this, pretty much anything to do with who we are and what we portray. So it's a very diverse kind of role, and it also encapsulates a lot of the marketing efforts that we do. So our paid partnerships and promotions with content creators, the trailers we put out, the wording and the images we use on our store pages, any banner ads that we run. There's a lot going on in terms of our outwards image and impression. On the business and kind of product side of things, a lot of that is us understanding the feedback that we're getting, the market positioning of our game, and industry trends. So there's a lot happening within the games industry. It's a huge industry with multiple different sectors and teams. And we work a lot with our partners and reps at Steam, Microsoft, Sony, physical distributors, retailers, our publisher, our account reps at Twitch and Facebook Gaming, hardware partners like in Intel and Nvidia, and all of these kind of companies. So a lot of what we're trying to do is work out where our games fit within the market, where the industry is, and where the industry is going, because games take a long time to be made, and even game updates take significant time. So the more we understand about the industry, where the industry is going, it allows us to plan better and make better titles. It allows us to be at the cutting edge and be involved when there's new announcements, major reveals. There might be times we want to avoid. If there's a big launch from a competitor, we don't want to be putting out something at the same time. If there's any kind of activity, any trends that we're seeing, we want to gather that information along with the feedback we get directly from our players and our community and the stats and metrics that we kind of monitor. And we work out where our game fits and where our game should be going. So we kind of, on the more product side, we kind of make a business case almost for what our next move should be when it comes to our games, whether that's our free post-release content and updates, or whether that's new additional titles, or even our back catalog at times. So a lot of it is business intelligence and understanding where our product fits within the marketplace. And we present that idea to our production and our design team and give them almost a framework to work within from a business aspect. Our games are, you know, we're still an indie company, so a lot of our games are still kind of made from the heart, if that makes sense. But we also need to have a kind of a business understanding. And as we grow from a small indie to a larger company, we need to be a little bit smarter about the way we make games. We have more parties involved than we ever used to do before. And it's really making sure that everybody knows what we're doing. We communicate that to our players as well as our partners, and that we are aligned with the overall direction of the industry and the trends that gamers want, rather than being behind the curve. My role is kind of hard to define, but it falls into those two main ballparks. Either outbound communication about our brand and our products, or gathering all the information and data we have about our game from our players, from industry sources, and working out where we should go next to deliver the best games to our players. Right. So that's so, kind of where it is. It's a very broad role, and it sounds like a lot.
Yes.
There is a fantastic team who helped me with this. We have our communications team with our community manager, Dara, and our new community associate, Aaron. We've got our player support team. We've got a head of product who's recently joined us. This is all kind of very recent for us. We made a very big shift in the last year or so, but it has been a longer ongoing shift away from a very indie mentality and to allowing us to have better connection with our players and better understand their needs going right forward. So it's a fantastic job. There's never a boring day. I'm always doing different things, and I'm very thankful that we've been able to grow out our team in the last 12 months to have this support and allow us to do these to improve our communication to our players.
Right. How does someone listening say they're, you know, this probably is a very minority amount of people, but if someone's listening and they want to get into a role like yours, how did you enter that position? I guess kind of what's your history? How did you enter it? And why did it interest you in the first place to kind of get into something like this?
With New World Interactive, it's a very different kind of culture and company than some of your more traditional established AAA companies. The team at New World Interactive started from the modding scene. Jeremy Blum, our founder, he originally started working on the Red Orchestra mod when I think he was about 15 or 16. And then after that, he started working on the Insurgency mod. All of these were non-commercial. They were passion projects by people who saw the games out there and really wanted to create their own unique experience. And thankfully, at the time, a lot of games were offering toolkits and sets to allow people to modify the games in the way that they want. So I actually came into the industry from the modding side of things. Prior to working at New World, I was in charge of research, development, and marketing for a chain of websites that related to modding and game customization. And during this time, we were working on a series of contests to encourage people to make user-generated content for games. So the team at Insurgency reached out to us and said that they wanted to do a level design contest. It was, at the time, it was the biggest community content contest out there. It was a $5,000 contest provided by New World and some sponsors at, I think it was Razer the first time around and Corsair the second time. And the idea was to challenge people to make their own custom map and gameplay experience for Insurgency. That contest did really well. They had 40 or 50 entries. They had several of them actually made it officially into the game, and the company actually hired several people from it. And at the time, I was working for this chain of websites, and we stayed in touch with the team at New World Interactive and did several subsequent campaigns in terms of advertising and also user-generated content contests. So we did another one for Day of Infamy, and one day I was at Gamescom in Germany, and I met up with Jeremy Blum to talk about ways in which our website could collaborate with New World Interactive. And the initial meeting was relatively short, and then we ended up going for dinner later that evening and talking a little bit about the company, the direction that Jeremy wanted to take it, the ideas and the ambitions that the team had. And we just started discussing from there. And then I think it was a few months later, I saw New World had put up a job that Jeremy had kind of talked about a little bit when we were meeting in person. And I believe I reached out to them or Keith might have reached out to me and said, you know, would you be interested in taking what you've known and learned from these websites in terms of building and growing communities and applying that to the products at New World? And so after a couple of months of back and forth and talking with them, I decided that I would join New World Interactive. It was a step that I wasn't really planning to make. Previously, I had been in university studying biomedical science, and I was going to go down the route of science and medicine. But this opportunity presented itself, and as someone who'd played games for a long time, it was a very exciting opportunity in a very fast-moving industry, one that changes a lot. It gave me the opportunity to work remotely from home initially, and I was really inspired by what Jeremy and Keith had been saying, the way that they wanted to grow this company, and that was something that I really wanted to be a part of. So my route into the industry is very non-traditional. Not many people happen to talk to people at trade shows or do these kind of events and have these opportunities. Most people in the industry normally see a job posting and apply to them. But one of the things that we've always been a big fan of when we've been hiring people is hiring people from within the community or sort of adjacent communities, people who have a knowledge and a passion for the game and who've got some kind of proven track record. So most of the time, when I talk to people about how to get into the industry, one of the things that will come up time and time again is people say all the jobs require you to have experience and you can't get experience without being in the industry. And it's this kind of loop. But one of the easiest things, especially now that a lot of the engines and tool sets are becoming more freely available, is my biggest advice is just go out there, make something and show that you've done something, whether it's making a 3D model, making a map, making, you know, writing a bit of code, doing your own prototype demo, regardless of what it is you have done, just showing that you have the kind of intuition to go out there, find resources, learn, you're self-motivated, that you can actually finish something to an extent, but it's showable as a portfolio or in an interview, goes a long way. And most of our team were hired from the modding scene. They were people who were working on cool projects, and we reached out and said, we love what you're doing. Would you like to come work for us? So it's not the traditional you apply to a company. Quite often we reach out to other people. But as we grow, we're definitely finding that we are advertising more formal roles now. Whereas in the early days, it was very much knowing people within your network and seeing people's skill sets and work that you really liked and approaching them to see, would you like to get on board with this project?
Well, I mean, that's awesome. Are you guys hiring? Is this the perfect time to shout out to anyone interested?
Yeah, we actually just took on a new programmer today. We've been trying to scale up quite a lot since we moved here to Calgary recently. I believe right now we've got about 5 or 6 roles on our career page. They're mainly in terms of programming department. So I think we've got 2 gameplay programmers, a backend programmer. I think we've got a technical artist or a technical animator and a few more roles. But we've been fortunate that we've found success with our games. And now that we've moved and set up our main development studio and our main location here in Calgary, in Alberta, we're really looking to grow that. We've got a very clear plan of what we want to do with our games and where we want to go next. And we're at a stage where we need more bodies and we need more people. So it's a really great chance for people to apply. If they do have experience, or if they're just interested in internships or finding things out, we have roles that we advertise, but there's also future roles that aren't listed yet and will be coming over the next 6 to 12 months. A lot of things are a little bit uncertain at the moment with everything going on in the world with COVID, but by all means, throw your hat in the ring, email someone. It's jobs@newwoodinteractive.com. And even if you don't get a response or you don't get invited to an interview, there's a lot you can learn about the application process, get feedback on your work, feedback on things. And quite often we do reach out to people who are on a list previously and we say, hey, there wasn't a role for you at this time, but we now need someone like this. Would you be interested? So it's a great learning process. And if there is anyone local listening who's interested and has the skills, by all means join. We put a lot of emphasis on cultural fit and how passionate and kind of dedicated you are, more so than skills. Skills are definitely important, but we kind of firmly believe that you can teach people skills and tools, but it's very hard to teach someone how to fit within the company and the structure and to have someone who's passionate about things. Most of our team were modders, very passion driven. In the early days, nobody got paid. They were just doing it for the love of things. And that's something that we really look for in people is, you know, why do you want this job? Is it going to be a 9-to-5 thing that, you know, you just do it to get a paycheck, or are you doing it because you really love what you're doing?
Right. Yeah, okay, folks, you heard it here first. Move to Alberta, move to me, and get a job at NWI. There's the pitch. It's a beautiful place. Calgary, my favorite city on the planet Earth. You will be working there. No, it's a great city. I want to transition into something a little different. A lot of the questions that have been popping up in the community from my personal perspective around some of the recent changes to Insurgency Sandstorm and where it seemed to have come from, and just the general, I guess, atmosphere of the community. Like, what is NWI's concept of the game. Like, if there's a spectrum of, I don't know, Call of Duty to Squad, or whatever FPSs you want to take, where does Insurgency fit on that continuum? And is it different from where it started or from the first game?
Yeah, that's a great question. We don't like drawing parallels to other games because we don't think that there really are any games out on the market who are exactly what we offer. Insurgency was, when it was the mod and even the first commercial Insurgency, it was really quite groundbreaking in some of the mechanics that it did and the gameplay that it offered compared to what games were available at the time. We see ourselves as kind of middle of the road game. We're not a military simulator. We're not this super, super realistic, slow paced, spend 20 minutes walking to try and find engagement, die, and then you're dead permanently type of game. But nor are we a fast-paced arcade game where people are bouncing off of walls and hiding behind a bush and your health suddenly comes back. We really position ourselves as an accessible tactical shooter, I would say, is the closest thing that we'd say. We want it to be a game, and we want it to be fun and enjoyable to play. But we really want to bring the grittiness and the immersion that comes with a more real kind of depiction of war. It's in our game, death is pretty fast. It's pretty unforgiving. One or two shots and you're probably going to die. If someone shoots you in the head with a pistol, you're going to be dead. If they shoot you in the head with a shotgun, you're going to be dead. It really doesn't matter too much about the weapon choice because everything is very lethal. There's no health regain, there's no crosshair, there's no mini-map, no HUD, nothing popping up, to flashing up saying you hit people or you're getting points. It's really about you with your gun and listening to sounds, observing what's going on and seeing what happens. If you shoot someone, there's nothing to tell you that person's dead. You actually have to watch their body kind of drop and fall to the floor to know that player's dead. You know, sometimes they may just dive behind some rocks and pop back up and shoot you. It's a lot more realistic, but without being full on simulation. We make some considerations for gameplay and balance. Not everything is one-to-one with real world because we want it to be fun. And yeah, That's kind of where we position ourselves.
Right.
A fun, immersive, accessible tactical shooter. It's not going to have this huge learning curve. Something you can pick up, you can hop in, but offers a very different perspective to the more fast-paced arcade shooters. With Sandstorm, we have changed a little bit from some of the original games and the mods, but this is because we've got feedback from our audience and our players saying that they want different experiences. As our community has grown, we found different sub-communities emerging from our games. We think that our game is pretty hardcore as it is when it goes out, but when we launched, we had people asking for an even more hardcore mode. So we added that into the game and made it super slow, super realistic, super, punishing if you do die. And we had, on the other side of the spectrum, we had people asking us for faster waves. So not having to wait 2 minutes until your wave respawns, and people who just want to be able to pick up something, get a feel for the gunplay, get a feel for the mechanics, but in a setting where if you're not so great, you are back into the action quicker. So we've definitely been trying to cater to all of our player base as a whole and the different communities and sub-communities that emerge within it. And our goal as developers is really to give people the tool sets and the skills to make the game the way that they want it to be played, much in the way that we took Half-Life 2 back in the early 2000s and made that into a game the way we wanted to play it. We offer mod tools for all of our games. We offer a huge range of server admin commands, various different mutators, various options that if you and your group of friends really want to play a specific type, then there's the tool sets and options available for you to do so. And we think that's a great way to grow communities.
Right. It's, I guess, comforting to hear you say that, because a lot of, or not a lot of, but some criticism was that, okay, they're just catering to a more casual audience, because that's where a bigger chunk of people lie, right? Just statistically, more people are going to come to the game. But to hear you say that you've made changes because of actual feedback, and you have the hardcore mode, and then you have domination, which is a bit, I guess, more casual, and that you're doing it in response to the community, not necessarily a top-down approach, but for what people want to play. It's good to know that that's where the decisions are coming from, I guess. Yeah, it's comforting to hear you say that. Why I like the game a lot is from kind of what you were describing earlier, how it's a tactical shooter that's difficult, but it isn't too difficult. It reminds me of kind of playing the first Call of Duty games before, in my view, they got a little bit more fast paced. And it reminded me of my childhood. A lot of it, when I first started Insurgency, I was like, whoa, this is uncanny. And then when you add the extra teamwork of the Observer and the Commander, and you can call in things, and it's a little bit more tactical if your team is working together properly, it's super enticing. It's definitely a good, I feel like you guys did a good job of keeping to a middle road and capturing a specific audience. So good job on that.
Absolutely. And some of the features that you mentioned, like the Commander and the Observer mechanic that we put in, that was never in the original Insurgency series. But it was actually something that came from one of our other games, Day of Infamy, which was it started out as a mod of Insurgency that set it in World War II. And then our developers and our team got behind that mod and supported it and turned it into its own product. And so this was something that our audience and player base said that they really loved about the other game, which was, you know, from a different franchise. And so, you know, we put that into Sandstorm because we heard, you know, great feedback about it across the board, and we felt it added something different. When you come to making games, there's a very interesting balance about how much do you change and innovate and how much do you keep the same. Obviously, Insurgency has been around for many years now, and there's people who like the tried and tested formula of the original Insurgency. But when we were making Insurgency Sandstorm, we wanted to add something different and unique. If we just did a straight copy of the previous game, people would be kind of upset that we didn't innovate and we didn't add anything new. But equally, if you go too far and you add too many new things, you kind of lose what the game was. So it's a very cautious balancing act of trying to innovate, really trying to create something new and unique, but while still keeping your core identity and the familiarity that your players like. And you see a lot of games and franchises do this. Some do it successfully, some do it not so successfully. This is why player feedback is super important to us. Once we ship our game, Insurgency came out on PC in December of 2018. And for the last 18 months, we've been listening to feedback, adjusting, changing, adding new content. For us, the game is never done, and it's a very hard time in a developer's in a product's life cycle is working out, well, when is this game done? There's always more things you could add. There's always new things that you could do. But you don't want to change or deviate too far away from the initial vision and goal that you had. So We've been listening a lot to player feedback. We've been doing a lot of surveys. We had one out 2 weeks ago. I think it had something like 15 or 20,000 responses, but we're slowly trawling through all of that information to make the decisions. Some of it comes from like hard metrics that we can measure, things like player counts. It's very easy to see if your player counts go up or down after a change. You can measure play time. You can measure your refund rate. You can measure your review score. There's these kind of things which are indicators of how a game's performing. But a lot of it still has to come from kind of anecdotal feedback from the players and what they're feeling. You know, you can't just have a solely data-driven approach. Otherwise, you're going to have a very boring, very stale, very clinical game. You want to make something that feels right and feels enjoyable, whilst equally sticking to your vision and not letting whoever shouts the loudest dictate where the game goes. It's a very hard task, but our community team do a great job. Every 2 weeks, we create a sentiment report which goes through our Steam forums, our focus forums, the Discord, Facebook, Twitter, all of these kind of sources, our Steam reviews, and gathers what the most talked about topics and features are, whether they are positive, negative. We work out a ratio of, okay, well, how do people feel about something? Is it unanimously hated? Is it unanimously loved? Is it more mixed? And if it is mixed, well, you know, what type of players are enjoying this and what type of players aren't enjoying this? So obviously we can't listen to every single bit of feedback. It would just be impossible for a small team like us to implement everything. And also, not all feedback is good feedback. Yeah. If you had 1,000 people deciding which direction a game would go, it'd go in 1,000 different directions and it wouldn't have a cohesive theme. So player feedback is super important. We do play tests every Thursday and Friday internally with community members and our team to get a feel of things. We try and put things out ahead of time on our community test environment. And, you know, we use a lot of surveys and feedback monitoring to guide our direction of where we go. But this is something that previously we didn't have a huge capability to do. In the past, you know, there's pretty much myself and our community manager who had to handle all of this side of things. But fortunately, as we've moved and as we've grown and with our success, we've been able to take on more people, which means we're able to respond to more comments. We're able to engage in more ways. We're now back to doing our live streams every other week, which is a great chance for people to hop on and ask questions in real time, see what the team are doing. We're trying to put up more blogs, trying to be more transparent. It's just a process. Everything like that is very time consuming, but it's super important that the players and prospective players and just the community in general knows what our team are doing, and we don't have this kind of long periods where we're not really saying anything and then suddenly here's a load of information at once. We want it to be consistent and regular. So that's our goal that we're moving towards. As we scale up, as we build up our team, we want to be more frequent in our communication and have a clearer roadmap and goal, so people know when they look at the game on the store page, they know what they're buying into and they know the direction that the game's going in.
I definitely feel that way now on this side, receiving the updates and the communication and catching a couple of the live streams. I feel it from your side on this side, and some of the other games that are good have a really awesome track record of constantly communicating and just building awesome communities. I think Insurgency feels that way. Yeah, I can confidently say it definitely feels that way now. When did the success kind of start for you guys? When did you start scaling up, I suppose? When were you able to hire more people? Is it due to Sandstorm? Or a combination of factors, and did that did that surprise you guys at all? Were you like, wow, this really kind of, this exceeded our expectations? Or was it kind of more in line with your goals? Okay, we released this game. Yes, it met our goals. Now we can expand our team. This was kind of the plan all along.
That's a really interesting question. And the success, I think really the company has always had a lot of success, even from the early days before I joined the company. So if we go back to the days of the mod team, before New World was ever an official company, when it was just a bunch of people on forums wanting to collaborate on a cool project. I believe like when the mod was released on moddb.com, it got like 1 million downloads in the first week, which was, you know, huge for a mod and a project of its size. And I think part of that was down to the fact that it was very unique at the time. It didn't, there wasn't anything like it on the market. And especially when we talked to other people within the industry and journalists, a lot of people mention the Insurgency mod as kind of a pioneer at the forefront of this sort of genre that's now, you know, evolved and is a lot more established. So there was always a lot of recognition, but 1 million downloads for a completely free project is very different from 1 million sales of a commercial game. So we knew from an early stage that there was a huge interest for this type of product and for this type of game. And that was at the time when after that success had happened, and Jeremy had, I think he'd finished his school and university by this point, he reached out to some people and said, would you like to do this commercially? It's a huge undertaking going from this amateur hobbyist kind of group and mindset, which was definitely had some of its issues. You know, we would have people who were only available to work during the summer because then they had to go back to school, or people who had real life jobs and other things. This was always a side project of other people. And trying to get people to take that leap of faith and do this full time is very hard. So, you know, fortunately Jeremy was able to secure kind of just enough funding to get together, you know, a core team of people to work on it and be able to pay them. Games take a long time to make. It's especially if it's your first time making a commercial title. There's actually a documentary series that we did with Game U Mentoring, which goes into this in a lot of detail about the early stages of the company. But you know, we knew that there was an audience for this. It was a kind of a question of, well, how do we turn this into a company and a business? How do we make this passion like a career and make it sustainable? So that was, you know, Jeremy founded the company and it had some very gradual success. We were gradually able to take some more people. But as mentioned in the documentary series, we got to a stage where we were almost going to run out of money. And so, you know, we did like an early access program before Steam even had early access available. We were selling through the website. And, you know, that got us just enough money to get to the finish point and put the game out. Once the game launched, it wasn't a huge instant success. It had its audience, but these tactical shooters are always a niche genre. That you know, they're not going to be mass market just by the very kind of nature of the gameplay type. But it, you know, it sold pretty well, and over time we added more content to the game, we added more features, and that grew the community. You'll see a lot of games, they launch, they have huge player counts, and then over time it just dwindles. Whereas with Insurgency, it wasn't really like that. It was the first game we put out, and you know, we didn't have millions of dollars of marketing budget. We didn't have a publisher. We couldn't do all of these things. It was a small indie team. And so it was very much a gradual organic growth. we did hit some really big highs when we did free weekends on Steam. That was huge for exposing people to this type of game, which many of them may not have even known existed. And being able to have people try the game without without having to pay for it up front is a great opportunity. We also did a Humble Bundle deal, which got the game into lots of people's hands. It was an interesting choice, because if you give away lots of copies of your game for free or for very little cost, you know, you're not making any or very little money off of these things, but you have a huge increase in players. And that means you've got a huge increase in server costs and anti-cheat costs and upkeep. But it worked in our favor. We had a lot of people try the game for this bundle, and that visibility, I believe a bundle at the time, if you bought the bundle, you got a couple of gift copies to give to friends. And so that kind of spread from word of mouth really worked. And, you know, because the servers were full, because more people were finding about it, more people were talking about it. This may have even been before the days of Twitch and all of these kind of things. So it was probably on community boards and message boards. You know, there was a lot more eyeballs on the game, and so that resulted in more sales. So it's always been a very gradual game, growth for the game. We've been fortunate that we've had lots of players over time, but we definitely learned from our past. There's definitely things that we could have done better. As a small team, and your first time doing things, you always look back on things and think, oh, you know, I wish we had done that, or we wish we had done this. So after the success of Insurgency, I think we sold 1 million copies on Steam or something, which for an indie game is fantastic. There's a chart out there that Ars Technica did, which showed that Insurgency was the second most played non-free-to-play game on Steam for 2014. And, you know, that's a huge undertaking for you know, a relatively new and small team. So, you know, we had that success, and at that point, you know, we had people within the industry looking on us, you know, kind of very seriously. We had publishers reaching out to us wanting to do a sequel. We had investors wanting to do things, and you know, fortunately, we kind of maintained our kind of indie spirit, and we wanted to do our own things. You know, we weren't, you know, trying to do a cash grab for a sequel, and we kept updating the game for, I think it's about 3.5 or 4 years, with loads of free content, and it grew and grew and grew. But at some point, you get to a stage in a game's life cycle where, you know, you're either limited by technology, or you're limited by, you know, your code base, and you have to, you know, fundamentally rewrite things, or you just hit a point where adding more content won't necessarily result in more players. So, you know, we were getting to that stage after 3 to 4 years of continuously updating the game, where we wanted to start thinking about a new project, and that's kind of where Sandstorm came. I spoke a little bit earlier about the challenges as designers face about how much do you add that's new, how much do you push the title and the franchise, and how much do you kind of keep the same as the original. Our team came up with lots of things that we wanted to do with the game, and that we tried, and we felt as a team that, because at this time we were still relatively small, we wanted to work with a publisher or a marketing partner. And we were fortunate at the time that we were able to not necessarily have our pick of publishers, but we had several people who were interested in working with us and really liked our team and our concept, and we were able to find a deal and an agreement that worked for us and for everybody involved. So that was great, and it really allowed our team to kind of take things to the next level. We wanted to, for us, console was a big one. this game it's actually been out on PC for a long, long time, and for the last sort of 4 years, we'd always been having messages from people who play on Xbox and PlayStation saying, "Will you bring this game to our platform? You know, we'd love this game. There's nothing like it on console. We'd love to play this." And so, you know, we knew that just as we, you know, created this game to the PC market, there was also this huge community out there as well who would love this type of game. And so that factored into our decision making. You know, we wanted to do console, and that was a whole new undertaking for our team. And it's, you know, a more complicated process in terms of physical distributions and certification, and the process is just a lot longer than self-publishing on PC. And so we wanted advice and guidance from a marketing partner there. So with Sandstorm, we did want to grow. But it was really built on the long-term success of Insurgency. And our more recent move has been built on the success of Sandstorm, which for us has performed very well. It's across like a lot of the metrics in terms of our review scores, playtime, player counts. It's performing very well compared to all of our other titles at the same stage of their life cycle. And you know, we're fortunate that we're able to build this and grow and do it in a way that is sustainable. That's kind of a very important thing for us, is we want to be sustainable, and we want to be able to put out good quality, reasonably priced products that our audience want to play without selling out or suddenly going too big and collapsing as a company or anything like that. We sustainability and steady continuous growth is really where we want to go.
That's quite the answer. Well, as an example, this new update you guys have cooking up over there, like I remember hearing about, or maybe it was a little teaser or something. I saw something on Reddit and I was like, "Oh, it's an update." And then all this stuff is coming out about it, and it's like, "Okay, this is a lot of content. Like this update is falling into a model of being of like making a sustainable game. Like there's night maps, there's all these new weapons, there's new locks on classes," which is really weird to think about, that there's locks on classes, but also now that it's something presented, it's kind of like, how come there, like, I can't, it's such a good idea, it's like it must have always existed in the game, you know, to have locks on the more like technical classes, the commander and observer, and even like the first time to use like the heavy machine gun can be really strange for people who are kind of used to other games where they're just running around. So there's like a perfect meme on the subreddit. It's like from Toy Story, the guy who brings the present looks like a little cube, then he turns and it's super long. Like that's what the update, that's exactly what it felt like to see the update come out. And it's good to hear you say, or I mean, you have a good track record. You have a great track, or the company has a great track record of keeping the game updated for free. Basically, if you own the game, it's going to be updated. That's kind of maybe a core tenet of what I think about when I think about Insurgency, Sandstorm, and older Insurgency, and so what I think about when I hear about your company. I know we're running out of time quickly here, but I hope you could tell me what your proudest moment at the company was, and then yeah, we can just wrap it up.
Yeah, I completely forgot that we were running out of time. I can I can book the days, and you know, I'd love to discuss more at another time. For me personally, I'm always very proud when we release something. It's a very kind of special feeling that something that you've been working on for, you know, 2 or 3 years is finally out and playable. And when you release something online, you get this digital feedback. It's, you know, reviews on Steam, it's comments on forums. But me personally, I really love events and being able to see people's reactions in person. So I was the probably the proudest moment for me was when we were at E3 2 years ago, and I was with another member of our team, Johnny Higginbottom, who he'd been around since the very, very early days of the company, and he had never thought that this hobby and passion project that he, you know, was working on with some people online would ever be at E3, you know, the biggest gaming show.
That's
right,
that
next to the Sony booth with all of these people queues around the corner for people to play it. And seeing the reaction on his face was kind of a, wow, we've really made it. And there's something that you don't get through messages and computer screens. It's when we do these kind of events, and you see whether it's players or journalists sitting down for the first time and they're playing a game, and then suddenly they hear a RPG fly past their head and they're like, holy, what the hell is going on here? Like, and you see the excitement and the energy from a player. That's something which is really tangible, and it really resonates with me. So I'm a huge fan of our physical events and demos. Especially E3 was a really big one. It was kind of a defining moment in our company to be this kind of underdog company that is, you know, deemed good enough to be with the big boy AAA, double A's, millions of dollar games. That for us was a very proud moment, and it's incredible to be part of that journey.
That's the answer I was trying to get from you earlier when we're talking about the like I wanted to hear, I didn't know if it was something that actually happened, but I wanted to hear, like, okay, how does the mod team, like, how do they feel going from a mod team which there's maybe millions of for all the different games, and to actually have like successful titles release and have so many people play their game, like, that's, yeah, with I'm curious, with like this physical locations, like you said, you love your physical events, all this talk around like E3 being closed for COVID and stuff, and maybe digital events are going to be in the future, does that like frighten you, or is that, you know, it's just the changing times, everyone's going to hop on that train? Or do you think, like, no, we're still going to have physical events, even if it's just New World Interactive events, like, we'll always have.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, physical events, like, while they're definitely one of my favorite things to do, they are also really draining on you. You might not think it, but when you're doing 5 days straight plus, you know, 2 days of setup, 2 days of tear down, spending, you know, before the show floor opens, right through to it closes, and you've shut everything down, and then having to do events and things in the evening, it's really sort of strenuous on you, especially when you're spending all day standing and talking to people. From a personal perspective, like, digital events are cool, and you can reach so many people now digitally, but there is definitely something, a part of me that really likes physical events. They're more expensive. You have to spend time traveling. You have to put people up in accommodation. You have to deal with tech issues more often than not. But it's that connection that players get with the game, and also the developers, that I think is less easy to convey digitally. I'm all for digital events. So I think it's great. And we'll definitely be taking part in a couple. But I do like to keep those physical events where possible, and provided that you know, things return to something that somewhat resembles normality, you know, we'd love to do more in the future. There's always been issues with physical events. You know, a lot of people have to travel. They are expensive, even for consumers. You know, if you don't live in the city or the region where the event is taking place, you have to spend a lot of time and money to get there. But you do get those really loyal fans who turn up.
And that's part of the magic, too.
I've had some great conversation.
The traveling and the cost and the journey is kind of, I don't know, It's half the fun. It's at least half the fun. Maybe like 60% of the fun. Like,
I mean, I love it. We have some great times, and you know, we work hard and we also play hard. There's lots of it's a great time for us to meet up with other developers as well, catch up with old contacts and friends. It is really, really nice, and it's something that I feel lacks in some of the digital events. There's been a couple of B2B networking events online, but you lose that ability to catch up with another development team in a bar after a show,
right?
Or you know, go out for dinner, or just bump into people in a hallway.
Yeah.
There will always be an area for that. Certain events just only really work in person. If everything's all scheduled, it's less organic. So it'll be interesting to see how things change. I think some events will adapt based on changes, and you can even see how E3 as an event has evolved over time, being coming from industry only and not being a consumer event at all, to now allowing being an industry focused event, but also allowing I think they offer this somewhere 10 or 20,000 or 40,000 public tickets to go there. Events always have to change with times, change with the type of games that are being produced, and new things that arise, like live streaming, and it's a huge innovation.
Right. Yeah. The best thing about teachers' conventions, I'm told, is that they descend like hawks on the city, and the bars are always, even if it's on a Thursday, the bars are always lit after. The funnest time about any convention is the time after with your friends.
Oh yeah, for sure. there are some great industry parties. It's really fun, and it's such a diverse and crazy industry. It's oddly close knit. There's a lot of the same people and people moving around between companies. But everyone's there for one reason, and it's everyone's very like minded, so it's great.
Yeah. You saying that makes me smile. It's a perfect end of the interview, I darn to say.
I appreciate it. I mean, I really like this opportunity to discuss a little bit about what we do in a slightly different format. I'd be more than happy to come on again and talk about some other topics if you want in the future. And I hope people found my rambling somewhat insightful.
we'll definitely have to have you on. I want to know. I'm so curious. I didn't want to ask, but maybe for next time. Don't answer it now. I want to know about Humble Bundle. I want to know how it works. That's something people might be interested in, with how do, on the back end of things, why do certain bundles go out? How do they go out? From a developer perspective, why would you do that? From Humble Bundle's perspective, what are they gaining? It's also interesting. Anyways, John, thanks for talking to us. It was a real pleasure for me personally, and I hope everyone else at home, you enjoyed. That was your Digital Logic Friday interview. You can tell us what you think on social media at @digital_logic. Don't go searching for our latest episode. Let it pop up right in your feed. John, where can people find out more about you and Insurgency?
If you want to find out more about Insurgency, you can follow us across all the social media channels @InsurgencyGame. And if you want to follow myself or New World Interactive, it is @JohnHigginsNWI on Twitter and @NWInteractive on Twitter.
All right. The links for that will be in the show notes. And thanks for listening.